Hi, I'm Dr. Caroline Leaf, and welcome to Cleaning Up the Mental Mess, a podcast where each week I discuss practical, simple, and scientifically backed ways to help you take back control of your mental health, help others, and ultimately live your happiest life. In this episode, I am interviewing Emily Morse. Dr. Emily Morse is an author, doctor of human sexuality, and host of the popular podcast Sex with Emily. She has appeared as a guest expert on many radio and television shows and has been featured in the New York Times, Time Magazine, the Los Angeles Times, and more. Today, the Sex with Emily podcast is downloaded more than 1 million times each month and continues to sit at the top of most major charts. Emily consistently aims to help singles and couples of all ages become more comfortable with themselves and their sexual wellness, because life is too short for bad sex. In today's episode, Emily and I discuss everything from orgasms, masturbation, pornography, dangerous myths about sex, how to talk to your children about sex, how to enjoy sex after suffering a sexual trauma like rape, and what to do if your partner has been unfaithful, how to reignite the flames in the bedroom, and so much more. Just before we start, I want to thank everyone again who has left a review, subscribed to this podcast, and shared it on social media with friends and family. Not only does your feedback help me improve each episode, but I also love seeing what you guys are learning and what key takeaways you have. It's so encouraging and exciting. And if you enjoyed today's podcast, please consider leaving a 5-star review. This information in this podcast is free. All I ask is that you share and subscribe. One more note before we begin. This interview was recorded remotely, so the audio quality may be a little scratchy in some areas. Now, back to today's episode. If you love listening to my podcasts and want to take your mental health healing journey to the next level, then I want to invite you to my 2020 Mental Health Solutions Summit, December 3rd through 5th in Dallas, Texas. The core focus of this conference is to give you simple, practical, applicable, scalable, and scientific solutions to help you take back control of your mental health and to help others and to make impactful changes in your community. You will learn how to manage the day-to-day stressors of life, as well as those acute stressors that blindside us. Our goal is to address your most pressing mental health concerns, help you find answers, and equip you with the knowledge and the resources that you need to make the change from living a life of barely surviving to one where you are thriving. There will be sessions on addiction recovery, sex and mental health, how to help your child become stress resilient and manage anxiety, how to detox your brain, nutrition tips to boost mental and physical health, and so much more. Early bird tickets are on sale now, so hurry and get yours today before prices increase on March 31st. We also have limited VIP tickets that include special private Q&A sessions with me and meet and greets with myself, and there are discounts available for groups. For more information and to register today, visit drleafconference.com. The link will also be in the show notes. Emily, I'm so thrilled to have you on my show today. I love what you do. I've been following you, and I think it's in a topic that people don't know how to talk about when talking about sex. Some people do and some people don't, but I'd say most people don't quite know how to talk about it. And I love how you do. I love how you tackle something that's actually on people's minds throughout 95% of the day or something, that we should be dealing with something that's actually so beautiful and wonderful and dealing with it in such a positive way like you do. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Really, I think it is an important topic. And I think you're right that sex is something, it's nothing to be shameful about. It's something that it shouldn't be seen as taboo. It's actually, you know, a really important part of life. So I just try to make it fun and accessible for people and try to make it accessible and approachable so we can all enjoy it.
Exactly. And you do that. You just speak with a straight face and you just do it. And it's fantastic. So well done. Okay. So just before we start, just tell us a little bit about you and, you know, what's not in your bio. Tell us something that is in your bio, what's not in your bio, what got you doing what you do today, why do you do it, you know, all that kind of thing.
Why do I do it? I mean, I've always been on the search since I graduated. I started in college to figuring out what I would do with my life that was like very purpose driven and about having an impact in the world. That always seemed like the most important thing. And through my journeys, I started out in politics, and then I realized that I took a turn from there and realized I was able to help people, but I felt like I was sort of disillusioned with that. And then the sex and relationship piece of it happened because I realized that I had a lot of questions and no one seemed to have the answers. And so I didn't start out being the expert. But 15 years ago, I decided to start a podcast in my living room, just interviewing people about their sex life and their relationships and what was their secrets to making it work. And right after I did that, like the very first day of the show, I thought, oh my God, this is something. Like, people are open about this, and I think that we're all going to learn together. And I think what I realized early on was that it really was impacting people. I started hearing from people saying, thank you so much. I've never heard anyone talk about this before. And the podcast medium, you know, made it free and accessible. And there's an anonymity to podcasts as well, that people could email with their questions and get them answered. So, and then it grew over time, and I went back to school and got my doctorate and stuff. But really keeps me going, I think, is the fact that it's so needed, is that people really need to have a place where they don't feel isolated or shamed or bad about themselves because they have sexual desires or because they want to have great sex. And there really aren't that many places to go. So I'm happy to be doing the podcast and then have this daily show on SiriusXM that can reach so many more people.
Oh, that's fantastic. So whatever we don't cover today, we're going to put all those details in the show notes so that people can go back and explore more and find out more information and contact you. And we'll definitely have you back on the show again. And so I'm very excited to dive in. Well, let's get to the question. Sex and mental health are so closely related. And as you've seen from the work that I do, I'm in mind brain research and mind health and mental health and mind management. And I'm forever having people come up to me and, you know, they talk that kind of whispered voices, but ask me about, you know, sex. And the questions I get asked are sometimes I get quite sad when I hear that a woman who's maybe in her 50s has never had an orgasm, or someone who's just, well, it's all about pleasing the men and that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of mental health and sex relationship. Can you talk about some of the most common issues you see in regards to the two?
Yeah, absolutely. And I get those people come up to me and do that as well, the calls and the questions. And I think a lot of it has to do with, well, first off, let's just start with, like, if people are taking medication. This is like the low-hanging fruit. If someone is on an antidepressant, like an SSRI, even the birth control pill can really have an impact on a woman's ability to experience pleasure, to have an orgasm. They might have a different sense of desire after they started a certain pill. So I think that's something important to take a look at. And if you're on a medication, I'm not saying go off of it at all. I'm saying talk to your doctor and just let them know, see if there's something else that you could do to add in, or maybe lessen the dose of something, like just to make sure that's one part of it.
I just want to jump in there, if you don't mind. I'm so glad you've raised that point. And there's an extensive amount of research showing especially antidepressants, how they can really damage one's sex life and desire and everything, and including weight gain. But that's just one of the side effects. And there's a lot of research on that and how people can change to diets that can help with the depression and mind management and so on. So I'm so glad you raised that.
Yeah, and diet is a huge part. I mean, you're so right. If we're not feeling great about ourselves, if we have low self-esteem, we're not feeling great about our body, we're just not taking care of ourselves, that's definitely going to impact our desire to have sex. So it is true. Better diet, we move, exercise, it's all going to increase blood flow, and it's going to help us feel better about our bodies and have more desire for sex. That's just true. More desire for everything, really. How we get good sleep. So if we're also going through anxiety or depression and we have like racing thoughts, our brain is the largest sex organ. And if our brain has been hijacked by negative conditioning, thoughts, depression, all these things, it's going to be really hard to turn it on in the bedroom, right? So for me, it's really a practice of what I tell people, it's really mindfulness and getting a practice going of focusing on the senses and what you're feeling in the moment, having more connected sex with our partner, like eye gazing. And I always like to say, like, the senses, like if you can have signals for sex where you're like, okay, right now my hands are my partner's body, so that's touch, or I'm hearing this certain playlist that I like, I'm tasting my, you know, the lip balm on my lips. I mean, just because when you focus on all five of the senses, you have no choice but to be anchored into the moment. So that's really helpful as well.
I love that. Being anchored into the moment by being more in tune with your five senses. That's incredibly good.
Yeah, thank you. And so that's one thing. But I feel like we put a lot of pressure on ourselves around sex too. So if somebody has gone through a trauma, let's say, or they have sexual, because mental illness, you asked at sex and mental health. I mean, it can mean so many things. So if it's untreated trauma, whether if it's sexual trauma, but also if it's any other kind of trauma, really, like PTSD, I mean, it can all impact our ability to, if we're all constantly in fight or flight, we're less in touch with our body, less likely to have an orgasm. And so I really think that the good news here is that most of the problems we're having around sex, if we haven't had an orgasm, we haven't had desire, we're not having pleasure, a lot of it can be solved or can be moved along with some really good therapy. If it's trauma, I love EMDR therapy, body work therapy, somatic therapy, because a lot of times trauma gets lodged in our body, right? And so if we are walking around with trauma or even shame, like if we grew up in a household where sex was shamed or we were told to save it for a certain time and we feel guilt about that, it's also going to be hard to get our brain on board for sex. We're going to feel guilty when we're having sex. Or masturbation is something else too. We think, well, for many women who have never had an orgasm before, it's not because they're not able to have an orgasm or that it's impossible. It's because perhaps they haven't given themselves permission, or they decide that it's only going to happen with a penis because that's what they were told. Well, for many women, and in fact, only 20% of women are able to have an orgasm from penetration alone. It's really about feeling comfortable with our bodies, self-love, masturbation, realizing that it's really a part of having a sexual healthy life. And that once we feel comfortable with our bodies, we're going to feel a lot more comfortable knowing what feels good to us. We're going to be able to explain that to a partner, and that will really help in the journey. So again, it's like releasing that conditioning that doesn't work for us and thinking, does that really serve me? Do I still believe that? So it's a process.
This episode is sponsored by Lola, a female-founded feminine care brand. Lola's tampons, pads, liners, and cleansing wipes are all made with 100% organic cotton. No toxins, no dyes, or synthetic fibers. I personally loved how convenient Lola makes it when ordering these products and how I could personalize my package to what I needed. Lola offers two trial sets, each featuring a mixed assortment of period products for just $5. Lola will send you a reminder email before your subscription officially starts, so it's a risk-free way to try the products before making a monthly commitment. This is truly a brand made for women by woman. It's never been easier to try Lola. Get started with a trial set today. Get 30% off your $5 trial set today. Visit mylola.com and enter Dr. Leaf to redeem your offer. The link will be in the show notes.
That's incredible. You've hit some hot buttons there that are very, very relevant. And you know, the work that I've done over the years helping people with mind from various different issues, one of the big things is basically finding the reason why, responding to those emotional signals and not having an orgasm or not enjoying sex. There's always, as you said, now there's a reason. And if there is that trauma, your whole brain and body just cannot function like it should. And that's why it's so important to, I'm just reinforcing and reiterating what you're saying. And I've actually developed an app called Switch. And in that, it basically goes through the five steps from mindfulness, but five steps beyond that in order to rewire your brain and find that underlying cause so that you can actually move forward in a relationship or whatever it may be, and identifying that trauma. And I've seen from feedback from people, I mean, I'm not a sex therapist, but we've had so many responses back from people finding the cause of going back to, it could be the shame at home, it could be some sort of religious shame, whatever it may be, or that, as you said, the trauma of whatever, wherever, whatever.
Trauma of life.
Exactly. I mean, we've all got trauma. We've all got something that we're dealing with that at some point in time will come in and affect us. And, you know, this is just one of the areas. And people change when they can start. And as you say as well, they change when they can start finding the cause, but it's a process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And being gentle with yourself and knowing that you're not just going to learn how to get your sex drive going or have an orgasm, but it's a commitment and it's a process, but it's well worth it. I was hearing about your app on your podcast and I think it's fascinating. I can't wait to download it. We need more mental apps like that that can help people. However, people are going to learn lessons and be able to get work. It's that maybe people can't go into therapy right away or they're not ready for it, but just having tools to help us sort all this out.
That's it, just that mind management, you know, just to have the daily mind management, but just keep going because, you know, you're on a roll and I love it.
Okay, so trauma. So also we, you know, really it's the work. I mean, I have to say that a lot of it is about, I think that every woman, the good news is, like I said, they can have an orgasm and there's no shame in like getting toys. I think toys, again, it's all of our messaging that it should only happen with a penis and a vagina. And that's really just not the way the majority of women, you know, so on my show, Sex with Emily, we do talk a lot about some great toys for couples or for individuals because your partner's fingers or their hand, they don't vibrate. And this is just what some women need. There's so many nerve endings. So to feel comfortable with their bodies is a big part of it.
Okay, I love that. Talk a lot about that. That's really good. It's going to help a lot of people. And you made a comment that only 20% of women will climax from a vaginal penetration.
Yeah, only 20%. So we're all told, right? If in the movies, in the whatever we read about sex, that we see them, there's no foreplay, there's no toys. They, you know, the couple falls into bed and they both have spontaneous fireworks every single time. Or even if people watch pornography, what we see there is not realistic depictions of how sex actually happens. Women require warm-up. We don't get turned on or aroused in the same way that men do. If we're talking to heterosexual couples, that's just the facts. Like our partner, if we're dating a man, might see us and come in and be turned on and aroused. And we're sitting here putting the children down or finishing up our work email. We're not turned on. You know, women, we are slow cookers and men are frying pans. If you think about the slow cooker, we need time to warm up and we need to know, well, you know, and I think what's a really helpful exercise is for many people to think about, well, when have I been the most turned on or aroused or when has sex feel great? And when people do these exercises, they realize like, oh, well, it was that time we were on vacation together and the kids weren't, you know, the kids were with a babysitter or we had alone time or I had a day off or I felt like I took a bath, I got a massage. It was spontaneous. We were driving along the side of the road and we had to pull aside to just make out or whatever. Mm. Like it's something that's unexpected or exciting or a buildup. And so just knowing your patterns for like, well, what has gotten me turned on in the past? And also having these held, if you're in a relationship, feeling comfortable talking about sex with your partner. I mean, I always say that communication is a lubrication and the more comfortable we feel, you know, people often think it's their own job to fix their sex life. But if you're in a relationship, it takes two, there's two of you. So you're not the one that has to bring all the answers or all the heat or all the desire, you know? So I think that if couples together decide, you know what, I realize we've never talked about our sex life and I know it's awkward or I don't have a blueprint for this, but would you be willing to go on a journey with me so we can figure out together what incredible sex looks like for both of us? Because I think that's an important part of life and I don't really know much about it, you know, because this is really revolutionary. That's why I have so many people every day who are listening or calling and saying, well, thank you. You just gave me permission to talk about it because we just don't see many examples of this. You have to seek out information about healthy sex to actually have it. Because if you're just looking at what the community, society is serving up for us, it's not going to work. It's not going to help us get through our sexual hurdles. So one thing could be talking about it with a partner and then saying, you know what? Well, maybe we could go to a sex toy store together. A lot of couples, you know, they listen to my podcast together and then they use it like how you'd use like a book club. Like they'll listen to it together because I have couples call in and then they're like, oh, what'd you think about what Emily said? And I'm like, blame me.
It's good. It's good blame. I'm sure it's good blame that you're getting, not bad blame.
Exactly. Right. Blame me in a good way. I'm like, tell him you were driving along and you heard this on the radio. But whatever they have to do to start it. And then what the amazing thing is once couples do, they're like, okay, well, we're going to order some of these toys together or we're going to go to a sex toy store because they're not what you think they are. They used to be all seedy and weird, but now you can go to like, there's some great stores that you can go into and people are really helpful. And so I feel like when you're in it together, then you realize, then you start experimenting and you start playing and you start thinking like, because what most couples crave, and I know I'm speaking a lot about couples now, but they crave novelty. Mm. They crave spontaneity because after we are with our partners day in and day out, and sharing a bedroom and the kids and the housework, like there's nothing novel or exciting about that. That's just the fact. And so if you can bring in something, it could just be using lube. I mean, I talk a lot about adding a lubricant to sex actually makes sex a lot more enjoyable for women. Women are more likely to orgasm. The Kinsey Institute had a great study that showed that when they added lubricant, if a woman just applied a few drops like on her vulva, like on the outside or a little bit on the inside, it really increased her chance of orgasm by 80%. But the reason why we don't is because I think society has made it seem like if we're not wet, that means if we're not aroused, our partner did something wrong or something's wrong with us. But the truth is women's bodies change over time. So different times of month with our cycle, we might be more wet than others. Medications could impact our ability. So really just adding a few drops as a safety measure could be a great way to like spice it up. It's something new. There's some beautiful, I always say one of my dreams is a lube on every nightstand. And I work with some great companies that make some beautiful lubes and no one even has to know what it is. You know, it looks like a face cream. So I just think just taking all the shame out of it and realizing if this thing really helps me feel more intimacy and more connected with my partner, then let's do that. You know, let's try something.
Oh, I love that. I love the openness, the honesty, the exploring together, and just the talking in such a sort of talking about like a great restaurant, having great sex. You know, I mean, we should be talking like that and in such an open way and encouraging couples to communicate, taking away the mystery and the shame. Because it's there. It's a part of humanity. I mean, we may as well enjoy it properly.
Right, exactly. And I think that once I give, you know, I'm able to give people permission, like here it is, like, it's okay. You're not, there's no sex police that are going to knock on your door and say that you, you know, you've done something wrong and that you're doing sex wrong. Like that doesn't exist, but
yeah,
it is so scary and taboo, especially as adults. Like if we've never heard anybody talk about it in the way I'm talking about it, and we've never heard anybody like, then what, we just have to get permission and you just start doing it. And I think what couples realize is once they start talking about it, it becomes pleasurable. It becomes the thing they actually look forward to in the relationships. But this is also a process, you know, when you want to do it in a way that is not shaming our partner and blaming like, well, you never initiate sex, or it's your fault I've never had an orgasm, or sex is boring because of you. No one's going to hear you after you start, you know, So it really comes from a place of like outside the bedroom. You don't want to talk about sex, funny enough, unlike cooking. You don't want to talk about it in the kitchen. You want to talk about it outside the bedroom and maybe when you guys are kind of relaxing or you're enjoying yourselves and just say, you know what? Like I said, I realize we haven't talked about this. Let's continue to have this conversation. So that's when you're best likely to have it in a most effective way.
That's fantastic. I love that. So in terms of, you mentioned children. And that's one of the questions I wanted to ask you about. How should we be talking about sex with our children? Because as, you know, teens and students, because that is, as we both know, and all of us know, your patterns for childhood or adulthood are laid down in childhood. It doesn't mean it's your future. You can change anything. Our brain can rewire as we change our mind. But wouldn't it be great to be proactive with such an important thing as opposed to reactive, and all the marriage issues that happen and so on? Because it's a big part. I think you probably know the statistic or the statement that's been said so often that if sex is a problem, it's 95% of the problem of the marriage. But if it's not a problem, kind of thing, you know,
That's exactly it. That's a very famous quote about sex. It's very true. Like it's when it becomes a problem, it becomes everything in the relationship and you can't get past it. So, I mean, I believe that, I mean, the challenge we're facing right now, and I'm so glad you asked me about education because that comes up a lot. It's funny. I'm talking to parents in their 40s who have kids in their who aren't having great sex, but then they've got teenagers at home and they don't know how to talk to them about sex. So we're in a really interesting time where if parents haven't even talked about it with their partner, you know, with their husbands or wives or themselves, it can be challenging. But I also feel like what I've advised a lot of parents to do and what they said at work, because a lot of them call back in and let me know how it worked, is just saying to their kids, you know, I think you have to start young, just talking about the proper name for their body parts. And then you talk about consent. You know, no one can touch your body unless you say they can touch it. And also about masturbation. I mean, I think it's important to talk to your kids because we know they're going to do it and that they should keep it private and keep it in their rooms. And if they have questions, they can follow up with you. But I feel like the mistake about sex is just not talking about it at all with our kids, or thinking it's a one-time conversation, like the birds and the bees. Like, sex is not a one-time conversation. It's an ongoing conversation. So if you've never talked about it with your kids, and I think also leaving it up to the schools isn't great because the schools aren't really doing it.
No, and they don't do it very well either.
Oh, it's not accurate. It's not really thorough. So I think it's just saying like, hey, I realize we haven't talked about this, but I want you to know that I'm here and I'm new at this as well, that I understand that you're going to masturbate. I mean, I have some episodes of this, some podcast episodes that cover this that could be really helpful for parents.
That'll be fantastic. I just want to interrupt you 1 second there because I want to tell people in the show notes, we're going to put down a link to Emily's podcast, and I strongly recommend that you go to them, you know, listen to them, get some advice, and we'll put all your links to all your information so people will be able to find you.
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you for that. I think that's great. But it's really just even saying to your kids, you know what? I realize that I've never talked about this with you. My parents didn't, but we're at a new time right now. And I think it's really important that we talk about these things. Like, I think that using things from pop culture might be helpful too. Like if you're watching a movie with your kids and you see like a relationship that seems sort of toxic or something happens, you turn off the TV and you're like, do you have any questions about that? And just kind of using things that are happening in your day-to-day life to kind of give examples to your kids is also a way. And to just kind of talk about it like I'm talking about it is definitely going to take away the stigma and the shame. I just think that they're walking around with all of this as well. And my mom said to me, if you have any questions, ask me. And it was a one-time thing. And the problem with our kids is they don't know the questions to ask.
Emily, the only education I got from my mom was men have needs.
Yeah.
I mean, that.
Right? Men have needs.
Men have needs. But that was it. Men have needs. Three words. That was all I ever heard about sex growing up all my life. And, you know, so when I had kids and I've got four, I thought that's just not going to be the case, you know. And it's like literally my husband had to teach me everything. And fortunately, he's very open and communicates. And that's been great because we have an incredibly good sex life. And I can talk like that in front of my kids. But it's not how I grew up. And it's not how I'm seeing a lot of people that I work in, how they grow up. And people are trying to speak about it, but they still kind of use analogies. And, you know, they don't say the direct thing, like you said straight away, penis, vagina, vulva. You know, we need to talk about these things.
We do. You know, when our kids are little, we skip right over the book, like, oh, we call it different names, right? Your hoo-ha or your private parts, or, you know, it's not sending the right message. And also saying the vagina and the vulva, the external part of the vagina is also the vulva. It's something to talk about and to explain that the clitoris exists only for female pleasure. And I just think that's really important information for women to have, because we are such a society that is based around male pleasure. Like, I believe that it was all about pleasing men. And I have a 19-year-old niece in Wisconsin, and she thought the same thing too. She was like, oh, and I'm like, oh, she finally, like, she came out and interned for me and realized that, like, there's actually a lot more to it. But the sad thing is that it hasn't changed a lot, you know, that people still are happy. Like, you're like, men have needs. Take care of your partner. If he, like, I think for many women, we think, well, if I please them or he has an orgasm, then I've done my job. And so we put our needs on the back burner, which we do for a lot of things. Women are caretakers, we're givers. But what we realize is once women start to sort of recognize that pleasure is their birthright and that they are, you know, that they have immense capacity for pleasure, that actually helps their relationship, that actually fuels the men in our lives. When women bring the energy of sex and we feel in our bodies and we look like, once we realize how it all works, we actually will want sex. We're going to desire it once we have the pleasure. And then that's attractive to our partners when we're in our bodies and we don't have the shame.
Yeah, it's so true. It's energy and it's so healthy for the brain. I mean, as a brain researcher, sex is just one of the greatest things for the brain when it's done in that safe, consensual environment. I mean, it releases all kinds of longevity, health, resilience, all kinds of stuff into the brain. And, you know, one thing I wanted to ask you, just there's so many questions, but I know there's a lot of research out there showing that the desire for sex has dropped off so dramatically. The younger generation are having less sex than the older generation, which is kind of swapped around. I'm sure you know a lot about that.
Yeah, you know, like, are we in a sex recession, everyone says. I mean, I believe that kids who grew up with their phones and digital technology, you know, the phones and stuff, that there's less connection, there's less interaction, there's less like ability just to go out and start talking to people and meeting people. So we're like hiding behind our phones, and maybe pornography also has something to do with that. It's like, well, I'm already having pleasure looking at my computer screen, so I don't really need to go out and meet someone or have actual intimacy with a human. And maybe there's just more fear around it, or people are afraid they're going to be judged, or it'll be, you know, online if they have sex with somebody. So I think there's a lot of things happening, but I would blame I'm going to have to blame technology a little bit, and just sort of lack of information and lack of experience actually with intimacy, even with friends and lovers.
Yeah, I think so. And then also the as you mentioned earlier, the very first question about the antidepressants, that can also, and there's more and more young people, this is the first generation of youth that are sometimes as young as 2 years of age that are actually growing up so heavily medicated with psychotropics, and it's changing how their bodies are functioning. And that's having a huge toll on sex lives. And then also just the pressures of the changes in how we run our lifestyles now.
Absolutely. And no one tells us.
No one tells us.
And it, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I know teenagers taking antidepressants. I don't even know about two-year-olds, but that's really upsetting to me because it just shows that there's some kind of regulation that needs to happen, fight or flight response, brain stuff. Like, look at that before you're putting them on medication. That makes me really sad.
It's very sad. And I do clinical trials and we've just finished one. We're busy with our analysis. And what's really interesting is our millennials are showing biological ages that are almost sometimes 40 years older than what they actually are. Their sex lives are non-existent. They're depressed. They're unhappy. And I'm thinking, gosh, what has my generation done that this generation that's growing up is battling so much with themselves that the most natural things are becoming a problem?
Yeah, exactly. Right. It's and they're all anxious too. A lot of anxiety and a lot of depression at a young age. You're right. I mean, I don't know.
We're not being allowed to process. You said something I think that's very relevant, and that's communication, talking, being open, and all the principles that you've actually laid out for a good sexual relationship is just so it's just not what's been encouraged in general in society, which is one of, you know, that if you said there's something wrong with you and don't express yourself and keep it inside, and the happiness industry, you've got to be happy. And so people are like scared if they don't know how to embrace their feelings. And that's, if it doesn't come out, it goes in, and that's going to affect your sex life. I mean, that's my take on it. You're the expert there, but I don't know what you think.
No, I absolutely believe that I believe that most of our challenges right now have to do with not experiencing emotions, not fully holding on to letting it could be have happened at a young age, right? We were crying and our parents walked outside the room and just gave us a look. And then we were told that crying wasn't okay, or being scared wasn't okay. And even joy. And so I think when we don't learn how to experience the range of emotions, you know, fear or anger or joy, and even sexual attraction, sadness, and when it doesn't get processed, you're right, we stuff it down and then it starts to show up as anxiety. It starts to show up in other ways, but really it's not even learning. And our parents don't know how to walk us through it either, right? I believe that we're all still learning as well, but I think that kids also, if they've grown up with an iPad, like they're probably not experiencing it. When they started to cry, I'm just thinking this through with you now, and their parent gives them an iPad, well, they're not really even feeling that sad. There's no resolution. So I think we're talking about resolving all of these emotions and that it's healthy to cry. It's healthy to feel all the things that we're not. So then it gets stuffed in our bodies, and our bodies are constantly in fight or flight. And then we're not able to, we don't allow sexual energy to come through us. And then when we're shamed for it, like maybe for many people, there's like one time in their life, it could be maybe we were touching ourselves at the dinner table and our parents said, no, that's dirty. Or they walked in on us or something happened. Your body is wrong. It's sinful. Then we never go back and visit that again and say, well, was that true in that moment? That could be the one moment where we decide my body is dirty. It is wrong. And we don't experience that emotion either. And it all gets tucked away. We might not even remember that first infraction, but that's going to have an impact.
Let me tell you about my secret weapon for learning new things and getting ahead. It's called Blinkist. Blinkist takes the best key takeaways, the need to know information from thousands of nonfiction books, and condenses them down into just 15 minutes that you can read or listen to. I love Blinkist because in less than 15 minutes, I feel like I can fast track my path to a more intelligent and informed and healthy me. I use Blinkist as part of my daily brain building morning routine, which helps really boost my mental health throughout the day. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to blinkist.com/drleaf, try it free for 7 days, and save 25% off your new subscription. The link will be in the show notes.
That's going to be embodied in you, and at some point that will come out, and it may come out on your wedding night, or it may come out in your first relationship, and you didn't even know it was there, and now you suddenly have this sexual issue and it becomes a huge thing because you haven't processed and dealt with it, or you haven't, and that's where you've got to do the work of openness, the processing, the embracing. And even with the technology, I agree with everything you said. They can even make the technology work for us. If you can't talk to your children, text with your children. if you're too shy to talk openly, listen to one of your podcasts together. You know, I mean, I love that you said that if they're watching a movie and something happens, switch it off and say, do you want to talk about this? But most of the time, it's like pretend it didn't happen, look away, you know, walk out the room, you know, hide it. So the whole message is coming through of hide and don't reveal. So I loved your practical tip, turn off the TV, talk about it.
Yeah, talk about it and say, oh yeah, that was interesting how that kid just teased that girl. That looks like bullying to me. Has that happened in your school? I mean, even no matter what it is, you can relate it back to something that might be relevant or something you read, you know, online, or if there's a big news story, how can you tie it into something to teach a lesson or to learn with them and just say, gosh, wouldn't these, or if it is a sex scene, my parents used to walk out of the room.
Yeah, mine did too.
Right, same. I'm not going to walk out of the room. I'm not sure what to do, but look at this moment we're sitting in. Like, just make it real, you know, because I just think the more real we are with our kids, like, that's how they won't have the shame and admitting that it's a different time right now and that you want to change the narrative with your kids, being honest about it.
That's so true. I was actually in a church conference and in the green room at the back, I was with a huge group, and the leader of the group, and I don't want to mention any names, we were talking about the TV show Outlander. I don't know if you've ever watched Outlander, but there are some incredibly graphic but beautiful sex scenes between two people that really love each other, and they're very explicit, especially the first season. And I encourage everyone to watch that because it's really a display of incredibly healthy sex between two people that really love each other. And I remember this pastor saying, oh, I love Outlander, but the sex. And I said, well, what's wrong with the sex? And I said, those are two consensual adults that love each other. It's great sex. It's sending a message to our youth. And she actually listened, and we ended up having a whole discussion, and she's very influential. So I'm hoping that message, but I'm saying then I've had other cases where it's, oh no, it's terrible. It's disgusting. It's evil. And, you know, the masturbation, you're going to go to hell. And I'm sitting in these green rooms and these places, and I'm thinking, gosh, I need to put Emily's podcast on in the green room for them to listen to.
I know. That's just the way it's always been. So people don't think to like change it. But yeah, I hear that as well. You know, because I do the nightly call and people call in, they're in their closets or they're like literally in the closet, or they're just like hiding out because it's just not safe. But people have the questions and they know something's been up. So I'm glad you're out there talking about it. You know, it's baby steps.
Well, I'm going to recommend as well, like if a parent says, how do I talk about it? They can listen to your podcast and they can see how you are using the language and how calm you about it and how you make it such a normal thing. And then they have a model and people can then copy the model, or they could listen to your podcast together.
Exactly. The copy, it gives them permission just to realize that everything's okay. The world's not going to fall apart. You know, people actually are better off having talked about it. And then we don't have to suffer silently, you know, and so many women have pain during sex as well.
I wanted to bring that up. I'm so glad you brought that up.
Yeah, like I was thinking about this because I had this guy called into my show, or he called in a few weeks ago, and he said, you know, I've been listening for a year now, and I want to tell you that I've been married for 27 years. When I started listening, he goes, and I was on the verge of divorce. I was going to end my relationship. But you kept saying, we got to talk to our partners. He's like, my wife didn't want to have sex with anymore. And she kept saying, nope, I just don't want to. And then finally one day he goes, Emily, you were just telling someone just to ask their partner, well, why don't they want to have sex? It just seems so simple, right? And I finally asked my wife, well, what is it? And she said, oh, well, I actually have pain. She said, but I felt bad and I have shame around it. And because a lot of women just accept it. Like 80% of women are going to have pain at some point. And she just didn't want to deal with it. She thought that sex was painful. So she went to her gynecologist, and there was really nothing that the gynecologist could do. But then she went to see a pelvic floor physical therapist. And for a lot of women, I mean, just like a physical therapist, if you throw out your back, and they would help them with like dilators. And like within a few like months, I think it was even a month, she was able to have healthy sex again. And all he did was ask her like, hey, babe, tell me more about why you don't want to have sex. And he said, now we're having the best sex of our lives. It was such a simple, like, oh, it's okay to talk about it, you know? So it's really common that happens.
I'm so glad you raised that. And it is so common. I work with a medical team, and I have a couple of OBGYNs on my team. And, you know, this is something that is so common, that sex can be painful for so many women and that you can deal with it. And it's so often just a very tight vagina and pelvic floor exercises or various, as you say, dilators. There are things that you can do along with maybe some trauma therapy or working on some mind management. But the big thing that opened the door there with what you said, which I just love, is you encourage that guy to actually say why. And she gave an answer. So we need to give people a safe space to ask questions and to answer questions. Do you find that as a problem? Because if you're getting so many people asking you questions, is the safe space, or is there a fear that people have of asking questions?
Well, that's a really great question. I think that the reason why, I'm so glad you brought this up, the reason why most people don't talk about it with their partners or with anybody is because in our minds, we go through the worst case scenario. Well, I'm going to tell my partner that I have pain and they're going to blame me. They're going to leave. They're going to think I'm a weirdo. I'm not lovable. I'm a bad person. Everyone else is having better sex. Like, right? These are the messages. So as a result, we're like, I'm just better off not talking about it. But what I've found is over the years, and I've been doing this for 15 years, and people call it, it's like, no, it's actually once you talk about it, and again, in a way that this is a practice, but just in a safe space saying, listen, I've been afraid to bring this up to you. I didn't know how to do it, but I really want you to know how much I love our sex life. I love our relationship. And this is scary for me, but this is what I want to say. Or however, you know, I give a lot of different scenarios of how to say it. Most people are going to realize that they don't get any of those negative responses. They don't get any of the, you're not lovable. I don't want to be with you. You know what I mean? That's just not true. Mm. So I think that's why we don't do it and we don't know how to talk about it. And literally it's like the worst. Our brain can only think of all the negative. And I think that ultimately all of our greatest fears is not being loved and being rejected. So I think that especially with sex, since again, we don't have great positive role models, we just decide to sweep it under the rug. And what happens is once we put our sex life and we sweep it under the rug or put it on the back burner, like we said, it becomes 90% of the problem. And then we just don't know what to do because it becomes bigger and bigger and bigger. So I think my rule of thumb is as soon as you start having sex with someone, even before, is when you start talking about it.
I like that. So even before you start, don't wait for the problems. Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, the problem is from the early part of a relationship that we call the honeymoon phase, which is actually a biological condition about 6 months to 2 years, is that we're running on fumes of love and that we're running on fumes of the oxytocin and all the love hormones that we don't think we have to talk about it because there's not a problem yet, right? It's running on this like newness and excitement and novelty, but we already talked about what happens when that sort of dips after a while. So the sooner we can say, you know what, I'm still learning about my body, or I really enjoy sex in the morning, or when do you enjoy sex, or what's one of your big fantasies, you know? And I have some tools on my site. I have something called a yes, no, maybe list, which you could also link to, that lists all these different sexual scenarios like kissing and touching or spanking or dirty talk. It's like you can just go through it and you can each answer it. There's like, is it a yes? Is it a no? Is it a maybe? And you might be surprised where you guys come up together. Couples can match up and be like, I've always thought about talking dirty as well, or I want to have sex in the living room or whatever it is. And then you just sort of, because people often don't even know what's on the menu. They don't know what's on the menu when it comes to sex. So this just gives them, you know, I try to just give people tools.
Oh, that's amazing. We'll definitely put that link up as well. That's amazing. Well, just related to that question, this kind of hangs around the concept of sex myths. Can you talk about some common, maybe even dangerous sex myths that you wish to dispel and clarify maybe? Because it sounds like, I love how you said that a lot of the fear that people have to talk comes from that feeling that they're going to be rejected and not loved for who they are and not valued for who they are, and that that's kind of going to attack that. I feel that that's tied into sex myths. I could be wrong. What do you think?
Yes, I love talking about myths because every time I talk to people, like, really? And I'm like, yes. So, well, the first one I covered, which I think is just, I will say it again, but people think that it's not an orgasm if it isn't an internal vaginal orgasm. And so to me, it's just like it doesn't count. But like I said, for 80%+ of women, so they require clitoral stimulation. And so they just do. So it's, you know, getting used to the foreplay and allowing touch and all that stuff. That's a big one, I think. You know, we also covered masturbation is bad for you. You know, people think it leads to sexual dysfunction, but in fact, part of being sexually healthy, orgasms, there's a lot of health benefits to having an orgasm. You know, it releases tension. It can help with menstrual cramps. You know, and it also, it's like a roadmap for understanding our body. So
I'm so glad you brought up that about masturbation, because that is one of those things that has had bad press, just constant bad press.
It does have bad press. And people think like, oh, I don't need to. I'm in a relationship. I'm like, that's when it's really healthy. So I think that's a big one. What else are some of the big ones is, I think that one of the big ones that I learned, I remember early on when I started studying this, was I believe the myth that men want sex more than women and women are frigid and that men are always wanting sex. I mean, I didn't think we were fit, but you know that whole saying?
I hate that.
And then I came to realize that, no, in fact, women want sex just as much, if not more than men in many cases, but also that what happens in relationships is there's often a mismatched libido. I would say that's like the most common question I get asked. one partner wants it more than the other, what do I do? And I think once we accept that that's a completely normal part of a relationship that happens to so many couples, you just have to learn to talk about it. Again, I'm going to keep going back to communication as a lubrication. The more we talk about it, the better sex we're going to have. You're going to realize that in many of those cases, the mismatch comes from either men or women wanting it more. So that's another one that I was like, oh, yeah.
I'm so glad you brought that up. I was just doing a conference recently and they had one panel was four husbands and wives, four couples came up, and then my husband and I came up, and one of the questions was about sex, and we were the fourth couple to answer, and I was getting so agitated because the other three couples were all going on about, yeah, it's for the men, and you know, they have more desire, and I just said, hang on, girls. I said, you've missed the boat. I said this, I said that Mac has to keep up with my sex drive, and you know, it created a laugh or whatever, but it opened a discussion to listen, women desire sex as well. This is not a man's thing. This is men and women. We all desire sex, and women as much, if not more, and it's good for all of us. And then I threw in, which is a true fact, it does increase your intelligence. So that was just a little extra, but Mac was like saying, calm down, you're going to get your turn. But it was just, I was sad in a way that women felt that, you know, they weren't challenging their husbands. The husbands were dominating the conversation and saying, you know, women don't desire it as much as us, and we're visually driven. I said, that's not the truth. I said, that's really not. And then the woman started opening up and saying, oh, actually, yeah, I do, you know.
Yes. Oh my God. I'm so glad you were there, because that's really what happens. I mean, yeah, still in 2020, every day we're believing these things. And for a lot of women, everything is conditioning. So maybe it sounds like they have been conditioned to believe that they don't want sex and that their partner always wants it, which might now have become their dynamic, because they actually were never getting their needs met. Sex was never enjoyable because it was always about pleasing their partners. Well, if sex is always about doing something for others, we're not going to get excited about it. We're like, why would I want to have sex if I'm not getting anything out of it? Penetration doesn't feel good. So, yeah.
Well, what about, let me go get, maybe jump. If you think of something else, we can just come back to it. But I wanted to ask you about, what advice can you give someone whose partner's been unfaithful? You know, how does one recover and move on from that?
Well, here's the thing. I feel like we take that when we hear that, we're in a relationship, we think, oh, if my partner ever cheats, I'm out. I'm going to leave. But what I've seen for a lot of couples is I don't think that it has to be the end. I mean, there's just as many examples about couples who go to therapy and you have to see a good therapist and they help you kind of sort it out and you learn to forgive. Now, forgiveness, again, very hard to repair trust is a hard thing to do on your own. But for many couples, once they get into therapy, they realize that actually someone having an affair was horrible, but the flip side is it allowed them to repair and actually come back stronger than ever. That is couples who are willing to put in the work. I don't think that you just turn a blind eye to it, though, and say, like, I mean, this also happens. I had a guy call in a few weeks ago and said, I'm having problems with my wife. And it took, after a few minutes, I'm like, well, did something happen? He's like, well, she cheated on me a year ago, but I'm over it. And I'm like, you don't really sound like you're over it. Because I think we think that if time goes by, it's going to get easier. But just like we were talking about repressing things and holding emotions in our body, and no, it's not going to go anywhere. So if someone's having an affair, you both want to work on it, I think you need a counselor to help you kind of sort through the emotions and feelings and figure out why the affair happened or what happened and what you guys can do to repair.
Today's episode is brought to you by Organifi. I recently started adding Organifi Pure to my water first thing in the morning to get my mind and brain ready for the day. Organifi Pure is infused with lion's mane and coffee berry and was designed to improve brain function by promoting gut health. This stuff really works. Since the gut contains the enteric nervous system, it's considered the second brain. Pure was designed to give clarity to people's lives by improving both brains. Plus, their coffee berry is clinically proven to increase BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factor. Some benefits of Organifi Pure include increased mental clarity and focus, improved memory and alertness, improved digestion, and more. Organifi Pure is USDA organic, gluten-free, dairy-free, soy-free, vegan, non-GMO, with clinically proven ingredients, and is 100% organic whole food. Get 15% off your order of Organifi Pure today with the code Dr. Leaf. Just visit Organifi.com/Dr. Leaf and use the code Dr. Leaf at checkout. The link and offer details will also be in the show notes.
I love that answer. I really love that answer. We know first for the time thing, I think so important. Time doesn't heal. You just learn how to either suppress and get worse, or you learn how to manage and move forward. And part of managing is the whole talk about it, process it, work on the forgiveness, find the underlying cause, a way forward. And that's so unique to the couple. I think that's just so vital, that the way that you've explained that. Yeah, and I love that. No, that's so good. You've mentioned, briefly referenced pornography. Can we talk a little bit more about that? What are your views on pornography? And if someone does have a porn addiction, or if the partner of someone with an addiction is stuck in a porn addiction, what advice can you share? What would you like to say about that?
This is what I want to say, is that porn is not, yeah. I mean, I think that the benefits of porn is, like, I think that it can be really helpful for people to watch together. They can get aroused. They can find porn that works for both of them and maybe find some scenes in there, something that turns them on.
Exactly.
But when porn becomes a problem is when we are using porn as an educational tool to learn how to have sex. It's not realistic. What we're seeing is porn mostly created by the male gaze for men. And it's not an accurate portrayal of how sex actually happens, of how women actually get aroused and turned on. And so I think knowing that, especially with young people today growing up on porn and assuming that this is how sex happens, it's just not accurate. Now, if somebody is addicted to porn, which people, there's all this, you know, oh, is it addiction? Is it not? I like to say it's addiction if it's a problem, if you can no longer perform with a partner, if you can no longer get aroused without pornography, that sex doesn't feel the same. That's when we know that it's a problem, right? And then I think, like anything else, you got to learn ways to cope without it. So that's really when mindfulness, somatic therapy, getting into our bodies, because then what happens is when we're just watching porn, we disassociate and then we're no longer in our bodies. We're in fantasy mode. And so I think that if there is a porn problem in the relationship, that definitely going back to connection again, sometimes taking intercourse off the table, and just going back to the things you did at the beginning, like kissing and making out. You know, kissing is often the first thing that goes in long-term relationships. So going back to those things that early on and connecting again, also seeing a sex therapist could be really helpful. But I think that if people are committed and have discipline, maybe it won't feel as good right away because they're like, I need the porn. But I think, like everything, it's rebuilding the neural pathways, you know, rewired to get kind of used to touch again with a human or with our own hands, and learning to kind of rebuild that.
That's such an excellent answer, and such a hopeful answer too, because addiction means consumed by, and we are, as humans, we consume by love. We literally, every part of our body is wired for love. I mean, there isn't, that's how we designed. So we need that love. So when it becomes distorted, it doesn't mean it's the end of the story. It means that we can, like you've just said, you relearn how to experience touch and in the correct way. And I love how you say to use pornography as a couple if it's going to help you advance your relationship, you know, in terms of helping you with your sex life. And then your sex life's good, your relationship is good. There's so much research, Emily, isn't there, showing how when people have made love the next day, I think it starts almost immediately and it goes on for about 24 to 48 hours, how it changes the total nature of how you relate to each other, and in such a positive way. And it's not just hormone rushes and great chemical rushes, which we get, and great longevity benefits, but it's also just in terms of that connection, that deep, meaningful connection that is so satisfying to who we are as humans. I don't know if you want to speak a little bit to that.
Caroline, I'm so glad you brought that up, because it's true. Like, if the more we talk about the benefits of sex, because we make it so complicated, like, oh, got to do the sex, or oh, it's been a week, we haven't done it. But yeah, there are actual benefits when couples have, and I see this all the time, when you have sex with your partner, like, I hear it from friends too, like, oh, I can't stand my husband. I'm like, well, when was the last time you had sex? They're like, you're right. And then they go home and have sex and it's so much better. Like, it's not the cure-all, but it certainly is a connector, and we need that intimacy. And the more we have intimacy, it is true. These studies that come out all the time, and there really was a recent one in the last few months that said, yeah, it lasts for about 2 to 3 days. That connection with your partner, you feel closer, you feel connected. Maybe a lot of the anger or resentments you were holding kind of fall away. And it shows us the importance of touch, of release, of intimacy and connection. So yes, I think it's good for our body. It's good for our mental health. It's good for orgasm as a release. I mean, all of those things. And even just intimacy, I think also what happens with couples is they think, well, we don't have time for sex, so we're not going to do it. But I want to remind everyone that like cuddling, touching, mutual masturbation, there's other things you could do. Like we think of sex so linearly, like it's about penetration, like you kiss, then you have penetration, then you fall asleep. And it's like, you could still do other things, give each other sensual massages. Like I said, make out, do other things that could still count and do the spike in all the love hormones that could feel good.
Oh, that's brilliant. And also what's happening on a neuroscientific and quantum physics level is that you literally build your partner into your head. And so you're literally wiring your partner into your head through the sexual act. So that's why there's that longing for each other. And every time you connect in that way, whether it's the, as you say, the full blown penetration, but just the whole build up and the connection and the massaging, all the things you've been saying, those all are rebuilding and strengthening. Whatever you think about the most grows. So it's growing in your brain and you're building a stronger and stronger relationships, which then help a connection. So physically you build each other in your brain. And as soon as something's in relationship, it's always in relationship. So you may as well make the relationship work, because like it or not, the minute that you are connecting, talking, like just even you and I talking now, there's a relationship that has started. And so when you're in a deep, intimate relationship with a husband and wife and two lovers, you are building a connection that is real in the quantum world. So when one person literally turns one way, the other person feels it. And that's why we feel each other. We can sense each other's emotions. And that's such a beautiful thing that can be used in such a good way. It also can be abused, but I mean, it's something to think about as well.
Definitely. No, I love the way you said that, because it's like, if that's not, you try to give people all the information so they realize like, oh no, sex can actually be something that's actually enjoyable and beneficial for every area of our lives. Couples who are connecting sexually or in a sexually healthy place, you know, it impacts their ability to parent, in their jobs, in their lives, you know, but it takes, like, again, it's a little bit of work, but just because you're not having it now doesn't mean that if you start to focus on your sex life and make it something that you guys share together, it can really have tremendous benefits in all areas of our life.
Oh, I think you're amazing. This is a fantastic conversation. I'd love to have you back on my podcast again and take this a little deeper. I'm so sorry we've come to the end of it. I've got to do another interview soon. And it's just been so exciting talking to you. And I hope you come back again.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoy talking to you.
It's been amazing. And we'll put all your links on everything where people can get hold of you on our show notes. But Ken, where can people find? I know you've mentioned a couple of times through the show, but if you wouldn't mind just saying again, where can people find out more about you and your work, your podcast?
Thank you. Yeah. Well, everything's at sexwithemily.com. I release 3 podcasts a week called Sex with Emily, wherever you listen to podcasts. And then if people have Sirius XM radio, I'm on Monday through Friday evenings, 5 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 8 to 10 East on channel Stars 109. And people can call in and ask questions, and it's great. And it's also on demand on their Sirius XM app. And then also all social media is Sex with Emily. So it's pretty easy.
Fantastic. That's wonderful. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. And it was a great discussion.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
I hope you found today's podcast interesting and helpful. If you want more tips and help with managing anxiety, depression, and mental health, be sure to visit my website at drleaf.com and to sign up for my weekly newsletter, where I also include a schedule of my speaking events and so much more. And follow me on social media. I'm on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Just look for Dr. Caroline Leaf. Also, I love seeing all your posts on social media about this podcast. I love seeing what resonates with you and what you've learned. So be sure to continue posting and tagging me and letting me know what you think and how these tips worked out for you. And don't forget, leave a review and keep spreading the word about this podcast. Thank you for joining me today. I really hope you learned something new and helpful. Till then, I'm Dr. Caroline Leaf. This podcast represents the opinions of myself and my guests. The content here should not be taken as medical advice. The content here is for educational and informational purposes only. Please consult your healthcare professional for any individual medical questions you may have. While we make every effort to ensure that the information we are sharing is accurate, we welcome any comments, suggestions, or corrections of errors.